Emily Wright.
Hello, Sam McClary.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm much better this week.
Does that mean you're going to talk ridiculously fast again?
No, I'm going to try not to. But it wasn't until I listened back to last week's episode of Tech Talk Radio, because we do listen to ourselves, that
I... Got to get the numbers up.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't understand why I sounded so audible and slow. And then I realised it was because I was ill.
Well, let's try and make you ill on a more regular basis.
Oh, let's not.
Oh, no, okay. So today we are going to sort of review, I guess, the best bits from last Friday's very excellent Tech Talk Live event, which you hosted in your ill state, but no one would have known apart from I've just told them now. And I think actually you did tell quite a lot of people afterwards that,
well,
you were ill.
It was fine until near the end, and then thank God there was that lectern there for me to hold on to for dear life. It was a great event, great speakers, amazing venue.
Yeah, so we're at Derwent London's White Collar Factory.
Yeah, it really was something else, actually.
Massive room.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of building work going on, so if you hear any of that in... in the recordings, then our apologies, but it was all for the ambience.
It was authentic, wasn't it?
Yeah. So Tech Talk Live was our event sponsored by CBRE, KPMG, Derwent, London, who obviously hosted us, and the first of what we hope will be quite a long series of these events. So if you were there and loved it, do let us know, and let us know what else you might like us to do a live event on. But if you weren't there, shame on you. Do listen in, because we will give you the highlights right now. Shall I start?
You start, yeah, you start.
We'll go me, you. I think that's fair.
Okay, oh, that sounds fair.
Yeah. So you weren't the only one with a bit of a croaky voice on Friday, were you?
No, but then this is Volker, isn't it?
Yeah.
His was self-inflicted.
His was, and he did... So Volker Buscher, who's head of digital services at Arup, confessed that he had been celebrating with, and this is a quote, some rowdy Germans who had left him a little horse. Not a Shetland, but actually just a bit croaky. So he started off the morning...
That was after the football, wasn't it? Was that the...
It was, yeah. It was at the Emirates, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really understand football, so I just nodded along
there.
But he started the morning's events off with his view on how the real estate world was reacting to this need for digital or tech transformation. And I really like that he said, well, in a very German way, I suppose, you'd either survive it or you wouldn't, which was quite blunt, but true. But I also thought it was really interesting that he talked about the fact that it wasn't just the tech in real estate that mattered, but the space too, and that to really respond to tech transformation in real estate, you had to think about the space that you're developing, fitting in with the people and the product that they were producing. So I thought that was really interesting, and here's what he has to say.
It's not just about technology. So the research we've done, where people just focus on the new tech, the cloud and the Waze and the blockchain, doesn't work either, because in our industry, the balance between the physical, the digital and the human has always been at the center of the approach that we need to take. So just putting technology into a new office block doesn't create this experience that we have here. Just doing this and not having the technology is probably not going to work when you have a workforce of 40,000 people and you want to scale that out to 70,000 people. And if you do the tech and the place, but you don't have a view on the people and how they interact with this place and the technology, that is also not going to work.
So he definitely said people more than tech in there. I think I counted a few peoples.
That was a theme, wasn't it, throughout?
Absolutely,
the event.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you know, people matter, don't they? And he sort of expanded on that a little bit further when he was saying that people are really important when you want buy-in for this transformation that we're all going through, and that you've got to get the right people on board, and that usually means from the top down.
The biggest differentiator we see in the industry right now is where the chief executive himself or herself, or where the person on the board takes principal ownership of the change agenda. Secondly, they do digital transformation genuinely, so they want to understand digital and what's really new in the tech, and by transformation they accept that it involves change. I have the same with my board right now. We do a digital transformation program, which everybody likes. Whoa, you know, digital transformation sounds like the right thing to do. But that the technology is new, people are afraid of in our industry, and that transformation also means change, and change might be significant is something people don't usually like. You know, we like to talk about change, we just don't necessarily like our own lives to change.
It's all change.
It's all change, but he says we don't necessarily always like change. How do you feel about change?
It's that thing, isn't it, that change is so crucial to move forward, and yet I don't know if it's just humans that are anti it, but I haven't asked any animals, but we seem to be very, very resistant to it. But nobody, I think it's more fear of the unknown, isn't it? And that's what change represents for so many people. Because if you look at it objectively, you know, this industry is full of pretty bright people,
yep,
bright sparks, who know that rationally you have to change and it makes sense, and staying stuck in one place is a really bad idea. And yet at the same time, that's exactly what lots of people try and do. I think it's more of an instinct than it is a rational decision.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, it's an industry that is cyclical, isn't it? So, you know, you get really comfortable just going round and round and round.
Yeah. And people like proof. You know, people like proof that something's worth changing for, or proof that something's worth getting on board with. And the fact of the matter is that whenever the proof emerges or the evidence emerges, it's normally too late.
Mm.
You have to take a bit of a leap of faith.
And that's what he was saying the big question that everyone's asking themselves is why bother? You know, he talked through the different methods that the real estate guys were generally taking towards their tech strategies, and just kept coming back to saying, you know, the question is that they're asking themselves is why bother? Why do we need to make this change? Here he is.
Some of the big real estate organizations are dealing with this sort of what I call pre-architecture. They develop their strategy at a portfolio level before they choose where the building goes, what the shape of the building is, and what the form is, and then they drive the technology strategy through the build through the program. Others, what we call digital master planning, take usually sort of a post-building design stage, and they take the form as a given, and then they develop either at a portfolio level the strategy and drive it through, or they start with one building and do sort of the headquarter approach and then try to scale it out from there. And the third group says, this is all too complicated. I want to solve one thing. I'm going to do energy management, which is usually the wrong place to start, or I'm just going to do occupancy and cost reduction, and then I'm going to scale out into new functions. They've all ended up at a place where they do all three. So these three methods are usually starting points rather than endpoints, and it suited usually the leadership and their style and their decision making, whether they're sort of more top down, complex change, I want to be strategic, or whether they're more pragmatist, let's do one thing and then scale out as an approach. So I'm not sure there's yet a method the industry has agreed on. But the most important questions that we still see is the question of why bother. And until you're clear in your own mind, it is actually very difficult to do a strategy around that. And the why bother question today is still in some places driven by, in the worst case, just on energy and connectivity, and that's not going to affect your strategic aims over time. Yeah, or it moves into a broader discussion on just cost saving, which I think is a better approach, but it still puts you into one corner. Or what we see right now, people explicitly saying, what drives the productivity of the occupier, what drives the comfort levels and the experience of the occupier, and how does technology come in? Secondly, how do I get efficiencies in the utilization of my portfolio at portfolio scale? And then thirdly, how do I drive cost strategically out of the organization across all elements of the organization? And those three things together in other industry has led to that both your brand and your perception, whether you're modern or not, and then your ability to raise finance and how the market perceives you is changing. So the question the industry still faces is whether a strategic approach gives you over 2 or 3 years a genuine differentiation that is sustainable, or whether the sort of bottom-up, organic, I do a bit of technology here, a bit of technology there, and over 3 or 5 years' time, I will have absorbed the new digital approach, is not answers. And as I said earlier, I think when we hear later from the PropTech guys, they will cause a lot of trouble and fun for all of us, because they are completely committed to digital transformation. They are not interested in organic change. So once they enter a market, it usually gets a bit more interesting. So we think the scaling of land value, building value, value of services and experiences, comprehensive understanding of cost will then, at some point in the near future, impact access to funding and finance, and most importantly, the brand, which is what everybody wants to protect and is really your differentiator. Because this has changed Durbin. I mean, it's quite interesting. You know, there are things you can do where the market sees you as more modern.
I like that, the bit that he finishes on there, that he says there are things you can do in the market when, or things you can do when the market sees you as more modern. And I think that is an issue that the industry has, as well as a lot of people. And I know you asked the question later on that, you know, the industry is often thought as a bit boring and staid and not modern. So the fact that he says, you know, going through this transformation can turn you into that modern, or give you that view of from the outside world as modern, and that can have a real impact on the market. I think that's a really, really nice takeaway for people. And then he finished up, and we should tell people that they can listen to the whole of the Tech Talk Live event, applause and all, questions and everything, at estatesgazette.podbean.com. Or there was a video stream that we did in a very techie way on Periscope.
Yeah.
So if people just search at Estates Gazette on Periscope, I think they should be able to find that. So yeah, he finished up talking about talent, and I think that comes back to this view of the industry as not being very modern. But he said it's the lack of talent is not just confined to the real estate world, didn't he?
Yeah, that was really interesting.
Really, really interesting, and that, you know, pretty much every major corporate out there has an issue, and there just aren't enough people with the right skills, yeah. And really, really aren't enough. So there's a very good stat coming up here.
The problem is the money we can afford on a digital champion is currently not competitive to the money a finance, you know, a fintech business or a media business can invest in the technology leaders. So we don't just face competition amongst each other. We also face competition from the other big industries that are going through the same change for this talent. And I think this is going to be a differentiator for almost forever. I mean, San Francisco, the West Coast, has been through this for 20 years or maybe 30 years. And they still have a shortage of people. And believe me, they got the best and the biggest universities churning out these people right now. And they still have a shortage. So I can't really see that going. It's the bottom end. You know, if your job is to go through spreadsheets manually to find anomalies somewhere in data and then act upon that, I would reskill quickly, you know. If you are putting, drawing, if you put what I called name fields and the sort of boundaries around drawings and put, you know, drawing numbers and places and version numbers on drawings, and that is your day job, evening schools, good idea, very quickly, that's all going to go. But what I talked around, the sort of digital leadership change, digital architects, data architects, enterprise architects, these roles, you are okay. You know, and the property industry hasn't got defined that right now. So when we interviewed the sort of the biggest real estate players, They didn't yet have digital officers. I think three had one in place. They didn't have enterprise architects. They didn't have a data strategy. I mean, these are big real estate organizations, 70,000 people, global real estate portfolio, and they would still have sort of Excel spreadsheets and walkie-talkies and clipboards for, you know, site selection and big investment decisions.
Do you know what I took away from that?
What?
That more people need to listen to the Tech Talk radio show.
Well, I think that's a takeaway that is very much worth highlighting.
Yeah, you know, you need to learn about this stuff.
Yeah.
You do, and so do we.
And so I was going to say, we might not be the people to tell you, but the people that we talk to might be.
Absolutely, and yeah, if... thankfully, my job doesn't really involve an Excel spreadsheet too much.
No.
But, you know, that message there that if you, your job involves an Excel sheet, you need to go to night school and learn something new, then I think everyone should take note of that. So that was Volker.
That was Volker.
Who has got himself quite a little following now in the industry, hasn't he? Or quite a big following,
yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah.
But yeah, but then you hosted after Volker. Very interesting panel, yeah.
Yeah, it was great. I think that there's an increasingly mixed view of panels, and this one, I think, was evidence that there is place. There are places for panels, always. So we had a great lineup of people. We had a mixture of investors, advisors. We had Emily Prideaux from Derwent as well, who was talking about the tech side of things more from that sort of leasing occupier side. But the general theme was, what is it that investors are actually looking for? What are the trends in the market? And what's coming up next? So Rob Nyes, who is founding partner of Hoxton Ventures, so they were an early stage investor in Deliveroo, and he is a former product manager from Google, and you'll be able to hear from the accent that he's an American who's moved over, but started off in the States. So he kicked us off with a pretty positive take on the state of the UK and the EU VC market in general, with a great endorsement for London.
So I think we're in a real renaissance period where there's a lot more capital available. You can build phenomenal, you know, global companies from London. There's a lot of domestic demand from companies already here, and increasingly you can have very large outcomes in terms of companies going public or selling to the bigger tech companies, et cetera. So I think it's a great time in tech, and London is very well positioned. Brexit be damned, it's still a great place for tech across the continent and around the world.
So great stuff there. I love that bit at the end. Brexit be damned. I think that is, you know, we talk about Brexit a lot, but that was it. Short, sweet, moving on. You know, yeah. We don't need to go into too much detail, but Brexit be damned. And I think that that's absolutely the right way to look at it. And I love the use of the word renaissance there. There's more room for the word renaissance on panels.
Do you want a renaissance of the word renaissance?
I think maybe I do. So thanks, Rob. also the word frock.
Oh.
A frock that should come back too, yeah. I think. Anyway, so then
but not blouse. You've told me off for saying blouse before, haven't you?
I cannot stand the word blouse.
I don't know why I said it, because I hate it too.
No, that's not coming back. So back to the panel, and
if we must.
Lisa Shaforostova, who is a real estate investment director for CBRE, she kind of followed up on what Rob had been saying, and added to that, saying that from her perspective, PropTech is attracting a lot more attention from really big investors, which is, I think, what pretty much everybody in the audience was expecting to hear and wanted to hear. So here she is.
We're seeing that a lot of investors are actually starting to open up more to sort of getting interest in at least listening how the technology can be incorporated in the investment decisions, especially such a big ticket deals. You know, they involve a lot of analysis, and a lot of interest is how they can capture some sort of non-traditional data sets like mobile phone data. If you're a retail investor, how you can start analyzing the sort of, again, non-traditional data sets and start factoring in your investment decision, whether you're buying a shopping center or investing in the high street retail. So yes, we're seeing big investors are starting to embrace at least, you know, the bigger a pool of data sets, and also they're asking us to sort of support them in the city selection decision using technology more as opposed to just traditional way of analyzing the assets.
So that's you know, that's great to hear. And I think there was sort of an audible, you know, kind of nodding of heads around the room at that stage.
Audible nodding of heads.
Oh,
were they like God. Wearing bells as earrings or something?
Glad you pulled me up on that. Otherwise, it would have gone off into the ether, and everyone would have been like, "Emily's an idiot,"
or just not noticed it. Sorry,
not noticed. Not an audible. I was thinking an audible, and then I realised there hadn't been anything audible.
No.
But there was a visible kind of nodding.
Visible
of heads.
Nodding of heads. Mind you, those little dogs that you used to get in the back of cars. That used to do the nodding. They made a little noise, didn't they?
Yeah. With the plastic. The audience didn't, though. You're right. I got it wrong.
Sorry.
Silly me. So the discussion then moved on to, I mean, it always does, to property's reputation as a slow adopter. And Philip Lewis, so Philip, obviously, of Kirsch Group and chairman of Riala. So he's an industry stalwart. And he had some interesting points to make on that. And it was really honest, you know, saying that, you'll hear from him now, but saying that it's the industry's been trying to protect itself.
Well, we've definitely been a slow adopter, but of course, the customers of the property business, the occupiers of the building, have driven the change. I mean, we've seen what Derwent have been doing, probably ahead of most of their competitors, because that's what the occupiers wanted. So in the same way, the customers of Riala, who are both landlords and agents, have decided that the buyers of the property, the buyers of those services, are already digitized. So they want a property market that starts to look like their business. And it's definitely changing. It's taken a long while because those of us in the business were keen to protect it. So there was a Bond Street village and there's a city village and everybody likes to go and have a chat. It was a beer, it's now a coffee. And that's the way the market's continued for a long, long time. But it's definitely changing. And that's why everybody's here.
And discussion moved quickly on to the money. So we heard from the investors, including Rob Dagger from Berenshia, about what they are, what they're focusing on, what they're looking for. And what's interesting is that, you know, at least two of the guys on the panel are not prop tech investors, they're tech investors. So it was interesting to hear their take on property. And Rob was saying, you know, that over the last 2 years, he's seen a huge amount of an uptick in interest around the property sector. And we also heard again from Philip, because there's been a bit of a shift, a really interesting shift. I'd say that maybe 18 months ago, 2 years ago, when you talked around prop tech, lots of people were saying, I'm just not sure the money's there. Well, it's flipped completely. And, you know, in Philip's words, there's tons of money, but not necessarily the opportunities. And that then kicked on to another really interesting point, which is that despite there not being plenty of opportunities, there's a lot of noise, and how do you work that out? I loved this part of the panel. Up next, there's a bit of challenging going on. Yeah, so Rob Nyes, Hoxton Ventures, was saying, I put to the panel this this bit of a discrepancy, really, between people saying, oh, it's a lot of noise, as we were discussing, but then it was Brendan Wallace, actually, from Fifth Wall, the PropTech only fund that launched in LA, who said, well, where property is at the moment on its adoption curve, there is no such thing as a bad idea. So it was this, you know, noise, but no such thing as a bad idea. How do you marry those two up? And Rob was saying, oh, you know, he didn't think he thought there was no such thing as a bad idea, and how exciting, and that if everybody's piling in, that must mean there's a problem to be solved, at which point Philip went, well, no, hang on, is there a problem to be solved, or are we just, you know, doing what we've always done, but doing
better.
It better and more efficiently. So this is what they had to say.
I think it's healthy, right? I mean, if you see a frenzy of people trying to solve a problem, it means that multiple people see that there's a problem that needs solving. So arguably, that's how you create great tech winners eventually, is by solving some problem really well. So I think it's great to see that, you know, the volume of property tech startups has gone up probably exponentially in the past 5 years. It means that people are seeing these problems and the market's starting to demand that you solve them better in more innovative ways. I mean, even you look at things like Habito or Trussell for mortgage origination. You know, that's a pretty kludgy offline process right now, and there's no reason why it shouldn't be a lot more seamless through online platforms. You know, if you look at things like Rentify for managing consumer rentals, I mean, all these things, I think, lend themselves well to tech solutions. The consumer market's there, and again, I think it's key to point out that a lot of innovation is being driven by consumer demands, that historically we had things like Microsoft Office that were meant for the office and eventually moved downstream to where every uni student had, you know, Microsoft Word on their computer. Innovation now, I think, is driven by consumer demand, that people are used to pressing a button and getting something. I mean, it's almost, you know, scientific in a sense that people want to press a button and get immediate results. So, you know, we work, you know, we add people into your waiting list with a button. You know, I think that's being driven upstream into business software now, that, you know, commercial tenants want to press a button and open a ticket for a repair. You know, they want that same level of interaction. So I think you're seeing a lot more of the innovation bubbling up, where people realize they can solve these problems with tech. They're just waiting for the pickup now on the demand side to really bring it in and mainline it.
I just wonder, Rob, whether we're really solving a problem, or is solving a problem doing something better or more efficiently? I just wonder how many new things we're actually going to create, or are we just going to do what we've been doing much more efficiently?
It's always good to get a bit of a debate going. And we've sort of rounded everything up really with just, you know, going back to basics. That's the sort of straight shooting question. What is it that investors are looking for? What is it that is going to catch their eye, and what kind of trends are they recognizing at the moment? So Dominic from Pi Labs weighed in on this point. So here you go. This is the stuff you need to know.
There is a requirement to more carefully analyze things like the business plan. So, you know, what is the runway on business? What is the, you know, those, because the cycles are just going to be longer. We're generally finding that companies, we would prefer them to be raising slightly more money in order to manage through that process. And so it's then a question of how you then back solve that into the overall kind of value proposition from both, from the company's point of view and us as investors.
It was a good panel.
It was a good panel.
Yeah, I think so. Those are just the, obviously, the edited highlights. But, you know, it's good to get people agreeing with each other, and it's good to get people disagreeing with each other. And you've got a bit of both of that. So
I liked at the end, and people will go to the full recording to listen to this, but you asked them what they wish they'd invested in, which threw up some quite interesting answers. Some people feeling a little bit...
don't think anyone liked that question very much.
Well, I think they're all a bit annoyed that they hadn't made money that they could have made.
Yeah.
But yeah, go to... statesgazette.podbean.com to listen to that. You will enjoy it, I promise. So post-panel, we had CBRE step up to the stand. So there's no denying, is there, that CBRE is investing really heavily in tech at the moment and looking to sort of lead the way among its competitors there on the tech front. It's definitely making a lot of noise about it. And, you know, it's one of our key sponsors for Tech Talk Live and the Academy, entry to which is still open, of course. And you can find out about that, just a little plug, at www.egi.co.uk/news/Tech Talk Academy. Have a check out. But anyway, their head of product engineering, which is a title I wouldn't usually put in a...
I've interrupted you without saying anything. So if anyone is listening, what
is
happened
that
there?
Not his title?
What happened is that was an audible interruption. What happened there was I sort of looked like I was going to say something and then didn't. But finish your sentence.
I was going to say it's not a title I'd expect to hear in an agent.
Yes, no, that's what I was going to say.
Because it's very, yeah. And I like it that there is one in an agent. I thought you were going to tell me I got it wrong then.
No, that's right.
So anyway, the head of product engineering at CBRE is Alex Bales. And he gave us a bit of an update on exactly what CBRE was up to in the world of tech. And it's a lot. He said over the last 5 years, it doubled its annual tech investment, which is... crazy. And then he said it tripled its investment into product and engineering, so making the tech, I suppose. And, you know, it's a big, big company, so that means big, big money. So I think that tells you a lot about where they want to be in terms of tech. And, of course, they have a big, big focus on data. And here's Alex talking through just three of the tech investments that they have.
Deal Flow is one of the products that I look after within the UK. So this is a global platform we use in our capital markets business. We rolled that out across Europe this year. There's well over 3,000 listings on the platform, representing well over $38 billion of inventory. That covers all the digital marketing, listings for all our property and portfolio sales. It's kind of all in one tool set, streamlines the entire disposition process, right from providing property marketing capabilities to full coverage tracking, data rooms, et cetera, et cetera. So that's been a real win for us and definitely setting us apart from some of our competition in that space. Flawed, so some of you may be familiar with Flawed. We acquired them in January this year. They have been predominantly rolled out in the US, but we're right now going through the process of rolling them out in EMEA. We've had a few pilots in Spain and the Netherlands, and they're coming to the UK in the next few months. Really exciting, innovative products. It's a 3D visualization product, and we can use that right across the board, whether it be leasing, investors, potential tenants. We can create test fits really quickly, real-time visibility to those key decision makers. You can plan out various important metrics, so headcount, open space for both investors and developer clients. And we can leverage that in any marketing toolkit. And there's some great wins there as well, because not only is that a tool that can be used by our brokers and our agents, but actually it's an interactive proposition that our clients can play with as well. So when they're trying to visualize a space, they're going to have to come back to us continually to try out new test fits. It's something they can change themselves. The next really interesting one, I think, that some of you may have seen. So in April, we announced an acquisition of Mainstream. So as Rob mentioned earlier, this is about kind of push-button service fulfillment. So they're a bit more of a mature business. They've been founded back in 1989. CBRE have been partnering with them for the last 15 years in our facilities management and GWS business. But they are a huge business. They support over 90,000 users globally. The majority of CBRE's facility managers and our clients are run on that platform. We've got it deployed in well over 50 countries. And so that, for us, was a product that was so intrinsically woven into the operations of our business that it just made sense to acquire, because that's going to continue to give us a competitive advantage, especially when we can strategically control the future of their development. So that's three big examples of stuff we've done. There's obviously loads more in the pipeline that clearly I can't talk about, but it's going to be really exciting, I think, for the rest of this year and early into next year.
So he mentioned Flawed there, which is soon to come to the UK. So that's their 3D imaging tool, and also soon coming to the UK is Dave Eisenberg, who sold Flawed to CBRE, and who's now, and this is another really brilliant title. I wish we had these titles. He's Senior Vice President of Digital Enablement.
That's an amazing title.
And technology. That
do you think enablement? Just a quick segue here. Do you think Damien listens to these? Because we could effectively choose our own job titles for the purposes of Tech Talk Radio.
Yeah. Okay, let's think about that.
Yeah.
Or if anybody wants to give us titles out there.
Oh, that's very dangerous. I wouldn't have put that out there.
Oh dear, I've done it now.
Oh god.
If anyone's give Emily a title, then email in to techtalk@egi.co.uk. Not me, I've already got two. Well, you've got two as well. Oh. Let's take one more. Dave Eisenberg. So Senior VP of Digital Enablement and Technology. He is coming to the UK in November because he's going to be a judge on the Academy, which is very exciting. So hopefully Flawed will either be here by then or not, and people can ask him all about that. So I cannot wait for that. Do you know what else I can't wait for?
I've got no idea. I genuinely have no idea. You're looking at me like I might know.
You probably wouldn't know because it's not something I'd usually say. But I can't wait to hear just how Alex responded to your challenge of getting him to explain blockchain in a matter of minutes. Should we hear him have a go?
Let's do it.
At a fundamental level, blockchain essentially is a distributed database. So we're all familiar with databases that sit in one single location on a server, distributing that across many nodes, and Bitcoin being an example, there's about 5,000 nodes processing Bitcoin transactions at any point in time. And essentially Bitcoin, they use the blockchain database as their global ledger. So every single transaction, every Bitcoin, right from the Genesis Bitcoin back in 2008, 2009, is recorded in that ledger. And you can use that database for any purpose where you need to have pseudo-anonymized data recorded in an absolutely immutable, trusted, non-corruptible fashion. And what's more, what gets really exciting is within Bitcoin, again, as an example, when, say, I want to give Emily one Bitcoin on the network, I'll log that transaction into the platform, and then there's 20-odd rules that are processed against that transaction to make sure it's a valid one, so to make sure that I actually own a Bitcoin, Emily's wallet ID is valid, et cetera, et cetera. Now, those 20-odd rules are relatively static within the Bitcoin network, but blockchain is flexible enough to allow you to execute any logic within there. And so what I think we'll start to see is things like smart contracts being exchanged within that platform. If we can codify the obligations and the various restrictions within a lease or a license agreement within code that can be executed within that blockchain, when the tenant or landlord meets those obligations, that data is trusted and validated. So an automated execution can occur when we can match up those obligations with the commitments from the various stakeholders. And that starts to open up really interesting spaces. So whereas now we may always revert to a license for a short-term flexible space, you can start to move into a territory where actually you can execute within minutes a codified short-term lease on a flexible space, which is probably something you couldn't do now. So I think that's going to take us into a really interesting space and open up, especially for a business like CBRE that traditionally plays in the larger end of the sector, opportunities to play in the smaller spaces where the margins are a bit tighter. We wouldn't normally roll out our traditional model in that sector, but we can start to play and add value back into that space there.
Well, I mean, you're basically an expert on blockchain these days.
Well, I borrowed some expertise and asked an expert about
it. Isn't
that
the same thing?
It kind of is.
Yeah.
But that, I mean, that is journalism, isn't it? We borrow what people say, put it down, and then punt it out.
Yeah. But so what did, but you're better, well, let's put it this way. You're in a better position than me to know whether what Alex said.
I thought, do you know, the one bit that I'm not the one bit, it was all very interesting, but the one really interesting bit for me was right near the
That's
end.
That's not very well saved, by the way.
Thank you. Was the bit right at the end where he talked about how blockchain could enable someone like CBRE, so this massive player in the world, to get involved with the sort of niche deals, because in the current system, the margin is just not there for them. But in using blockchain, they could, the margin wouldn't really matter so much, so they could get involved in that. And I thought that was that wasn't at all what I was expecting him to say. So for fear of using the I word, I found that really interesting.
Oh, well, I'm glad you found it interesting. And I'm only saying that word in response to you saying it, so it doesn't count.
Thanks. Do you know what I can do from that last segment, though? I think I can link seamlessly okay. from blockchain to your final speaker.
Okay, I think I know how you're going to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you said I was an expert on blockchain.
Yes.
But I said I borrowed my expertise on blockchain from an expert who is Ragnar Lichtrasier, who is, I think, his founder. Yeah, founder of the International Blockchain Real Estate Association. People can listen to that podcast if they go to Podbean and search Tech Talk. But Ragnar, of course, is going to be in New York in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah.
At New York Real Estate Tech Week, yeah. which is run by Metaprop NYC, which brings us
to our final speaker.
Yes.
Oh, we did it. And, you know, if we could just get in there that we are international media partner for New York Real Estate Tech Week, that would make it even more perfect.
It would sound almost like we're professionals.
Yeah.
We're not, but.
So back to Metaprop NYC, and yes, our final speaker of the day was Zach Schwartzman, who heads up the VC side of that business. So Metaprop NYC is, for those who don't know, a kind of accelerator investor program in New York, shockingly, focusing on property, also shockingly. And we've had Aaron Block on, who heads that business up, on this podcast before. So Zach was, I think, in London for, I think it ended up being something like 9 hours or 10 hours.
Wow.
Yeah, so he flew in literally just to talk to everybody at this event. So he was there to give a bit of a glimpse into the future. I always say that I think that what the States is doing and what the US is doing is most likely the direction that we're going to end up going in eventually. And they are a bit more sort of ahead of the game over there in terms of adoption and in terms of financials and the money. So he came to talk about some trends, and he started off actually by talking about this general idea around adoption, but from a US perspective. And he was saying that the big property, the big traditional property firms in the US, he said that adoption was really taking off. And I thought it was interesting that he said that people have really got their eyes on what their peers are doing. Hmm. And that is something that we're definitely seeing in the UK. You know, it's funny, isn't it? It doesn't matter, you know, whether you're at, you know, nursery school or big school or doing your job. Like, when other people start doing stuff, particularly your competitors or your peers or the people you're measured up against, that's when, you know, the ball really starts rolling. And this is what he had to say.
Amongst the kind of larger traditional real estate firm, there is a lot more recognition and taking seriously of the opportunity within PropTech that exists today than we've seen traditionally. We see everything on a spectrum from people completely reimagining their firm's business to be a technology firm that happens to engage in the real estate business, to simply being early in their exploration and wanting to understand what is the map that they're looking at in terms of early stage prop tech and how are their peers engaging.
So Zach had so much great stuff to say, and I would really urge everybody to listen to what he said in full. But the thing that I'd sort of pick out as well, the thing to sort of end on, and I like this about what Zach said, and I think that more people should think about this and hopefully feel inspired, encouraged. He really made the point that this isn't about glitz, glamour, and excitement. You know, there are some, you know, the prop tech sector and the tech sector and everything that goes with it is exciting. It's futuristic. It's, you know, it's the stuff that if you're not scared by it, everybody wants to be part of. And even if you are scared of it, you probably want to be part of it because you know that it's the future. But he was saying, you know, the stuff that puts people to sleep at cocktail parties. There's money in that.
Yeah, look to the corners, he said, didn't he?
Yeah, which is they really deal good. Around, you know, they deal with the corners and the enclaves of the industry, and they're looking at stuff that, you know, is not necessarily the bright, shiny, exciting next big thing. And I think being blinded by the next big thing is a real potential pitfall. So listen to what he has to say here, because I think it's very wise.
We spend a lot of our time looking in the corners of real estate, some of the kind of backwaters that are huge end markets but have almost no technology penetration, very few new players coming into that market from an innovation standpoint. We have, in recent months, made bets in roofing inspection, commercial appraisal. We've done a good amount in terms of amenities, title insurance, HVAC. I mean, the kind of stuff that kind of puts people to sleep at cocktail parties, there's money in that. And there are often not a lot of people who have spent a considerable amount of time creating very elegant solutions that address real market needs in those segments.
He put it much better than I did, and as I say, those are just two of the bits that really struck me about what Zach said. But it is definitely worth listening to the whole thing. And for those of you who are going out to New York Real Estate Tech Week, and I know there's a lot of people who are, I think that'll be a brilliant event, and look forward to seeing you out there. And for those that aren't, we'll be covering it obviously on a daily basis and reporting back, so you don't have to, which I'm sure everybody will be delighted to hear, not to have
to
go on a trip to New York.
Damn it, I don't have to go to New York in October when it's still pleasant, not too cold.
Yeah, it should be lovely, but all, you know, hard work.
Of course.
And of course, and anyone who is going to be out there for New York Real Estate Tech Week who's listening to this, then drop me a line, emily.wright@egi.com. co.uk.
That's your email address.
I
well
suddenly
done.
Got confused with whether it was co.uk or co.com because I got distracted by the spelling of my surname.
Well, it is tough. It could be with an R.
Yeah, it could be. So emily.wright@egi.co.uk, drop me a line and let me know, and it'd be good to catch up.
And while you're emailing, do let us know via email Emily, or send us a tweet.
I'm
going
to get lots
something.
Of emails.
You are.
new job titles. I can't wait.
But if there's anything you particularly want us to ramble on about in this podcast, or particular guests you think we should get on, then we do want to hear from you. So keep in touch. Thanks for listening if you've made it to the end.
Well, if you've made it to the end, I applaud you.
Yeah.
I do.
On that note.
Any tips, email me.
Yeah, there we go. Cheerio.
Bye.